effect of that policy change. This simply maintains the status quo until we know what the effect is. I'm not a very smart guy, and I admit that on a regular basis and prove it daily. However, even I can come to the conclusion that I don't want to change something until I have some idea what the effect of that change is going to be. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Alden?
I'll remove my amendment to the amendment.
Representative Hudson?
Mr. Chairman, since we're just talking kind of conceptually here, I wonder if we were to, and this is conceptual, change the words to every school district shall consider the establishment of educational services, which would require that every school district consider, but not absolutely mandate, they take them up, because as I understand, my good friend here from Nome indicated that perhaps in his school district they may not have this. This may not be an issue there. But at least what it would do is it would require that every school district consider it, and it would put the legislature, it would ease some of my concern about failure to pass the last one and totally removing this out of the legislation. So I would offer that as a friendly amendment to whoever is offering this amendment.
Representative Davies is offering an amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I think that it effectively guts the amendment. It doesn't. What we're doing is every district is being provided money for this purpose, and what we're just saying here at the most minimal possible way is that we want you to use some of the money you're getting for this purpose. Not telling them how much of a program.
But I think to the chair. John, if you maintain the shall, consider, you're directing them to, you're still giving them the autonomy, the local decision, but you're not forcing them to establish something that maybe they can't or don't want.
Most all districts do it right now.
No. Okay.
What you take away is another thing you take away is the right of a parent to insist that it happen.
Well, given the failure of the last amendment, I mean, I was kind of moved to the fact that we're, you know, eliminating this altogether, and I don't think that's a good idea. I would like to see, you know, this sort of intent language in there in some form or another. I'm happy to stick with essentially the amendment as it was presented.
Okay.
I'm just trying to find a broader level of support among the
members. Is there any more objection to this amendment?
Number two? I would move withdraw my objection, Mr. Chairman.
No objection.
The motion to amend is passed. Amendment number two is adopted. Any more amendments before us? If not, what's the wishes of the committee?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move 1871.
Hold it, please. Representative
Davies? Mr. Chairman, it was just pointed out to me that this may require recognition of the title, so could you extend the latitude of the conceptual amendment to whatever the drafter needs in the title to accommodate that?
Shall or may require.
Yes, we will do that.
Thank you.
Representative Bundy?
Yeah, just a question. Now that we're requiring this as an unfunded mandate, and is there a fiscal note that will accompany this?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe so, because we already provide the funding to the districts. The real question would become the funding to the department, and I believe that they've already established a hierarchy within their department of how to answer and service it. So I think this is a requirement to the school district without providing a necessary additional component within the department.
Wilson Foster.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move HB 71 out of committee with the attached fiscal note within the
funding is out the man.
Heard the motion to move. Is any objection to the motion? If not, bill is moved from committee. Next we'll go to House Bill, Senate Bill 65.
We'll do process then.
I mean, whatever.
it's gone now.
Yes. State your name for the record.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Jomo Stewart. I'm working with Senator Dave Donlan. Senate Bill 65, the title of it reads, An Act Requiring a Study Regarding Pay for Equal Work for Certain State Employees. The bill proposes the state do a pay equity study. The state has never actually performed a study of this type, though there is evidence that there are wage disparities between men and women in the state in general and as well in government. I would refer you briefly to the information packet, which I believe you all received. In the Alaska Economic Trends, published in February of 1999. Within your packets, I only provided the first page of that study, but only to illustrate that the study that was done in 1999 used 1997 data, and it showed that overall women were paid about 35% less than men overall in the state. What wasn't provided, just because I didn't want to snowblind you all with too much information. Part of that study did go into state and local government. As of 1997, women within state government on the whole were making about 73% of what men were making, and in local government they were making slightly more at about 76 to 77%. So there was a disparity in government. The intent of the sponsor is that this study specifically examine the question of equal pay for equal work among state employees. Also provided with you in your information packet was a definition sheet. Not to muddle the issue too much, but if you could refer quickly to the information sheet. Equal pay for same work was defined, as well as comparable worth. Specifically, though, we'll be going for equal pay for equal work. This principle requires equal compensation for jobs that require substantially the same skills, effort, and responsibility and are performed under similar working conditions. This is where the study should be focused. We need to be sure that our process for classifying positions is not influenced by gender. Equal pay for equal work requires equal compensation for jobs that require substantially the same skills. A pay equity study will help determine if and where inequities exist and provide an opportunity to comply with state and federal law. And ensuring the state's pay practices are not influenced by gender is good public policy. This bill gives us an opportunity to promote fairness in the workplace, something I think we'd all agree to. Voluntary pay equity is more cost-effective than court-ordered pay equity adjustments, which tend to lead to substantially greater cost. Discrimination suits tend to be very costly, as well as overall illegal. I refer you to number two in your information packet, which is the comparison between Washington State and Minnesota. Washington State found that there were inequities in their pay, but didn't do anything about it, where Minnesota phased it in through legislation and arbitration. And as you can see at the very bottom, the costs were substantially different. To phase it in Minnesota cost roughly about $31 million, spread it over about 4 years, whereas in Washington, after litigation and the court order, it ended up costing them about $106 million, so a threefold difference. And I believe that's just about it. Pay equity is a pretty long-running national movement. It's been in progress since the mid-80s. 24 states, including Washington, D.C., have conducted studies of this nature, pay equity studies. And basically, we just want to see if we're in compliance. As far as I know, Alaska is one of the better classification systems as far as gender equity is concerned, but we don't know if there's a problem because we've never actually done a study. On page one of the Alaska Economic Trends, they actually state that yes, they noticed that there was a difference between the pay scales of women and men, but they never actually went in to see why those differences existed. They didn't go out to try to determine what the cause of those inequities might be. That's what we'd like to do.
Any questions for the sponsor? Representative Hudson?
Yes. Is it the perception that the courts are requiring that we show that we are in compliance? I mean, does the senator believe this to be a necessary or a desirable action?
Respectfully through the chair, I can't directly answer for the senator. As far as I know, we're not under any court pressure. I believe he wants to do this. It's necessary for our own sense of well-being to know that we are being equitable in our pay scales. But no, as far as I know right now, we're not under any direct court order.
The reason I ask, Mr. Chairman, is having gone through this in the years past and remembering when there were some inequities, the next thing that happened is I was getting calls from some male employees on the ships who were complaining that their salary was being demoted or reduced because they were not comparable to, rather than increase the salary of the females into the class, they decreased the salary of the males in the class. And I started getting calls, I was commissioner of administration at the time, calls from the from all of the comparable males working in that same class. And the state had, at that point in time, decided to make it equal by essentially reducing it for some, and it was really a hard situation. But I don't think that has any bearing on this. I have no problem with this thing, so.
Any other questions for the sponsor, representative?
Yeah, I like the bill, but I can't help but think it's just the tip of an iceberg. It's like probably some of the lowest paying jobs here in this building are the janitorial, and those are all minorities in there. If you go into my villages, and we've got some jobs happening, like building a runway or something. Everybody comes up from Alabama or Anchorage and moves to Alakanuk or Kotlik to do the job, and they might hire one of the local people to grease a cat or something. They get the lowest paid jobs. I think minorities have a big role in here, too. And I think it's compounded further if you're a minority woman trying to get a job in Bush, Alaska, or even here in this Capitol building. So I think this is a good start, but I think it's got a lot more to go.
Respectfully through the chair, in House State Affairs, this did come up. Just to keep us on focus, specifically this is for state employees. We're not going to shoot for the greater public, the greater private sector, as that's up to you all, honestly. But yes, the minority issue did come up, and pretty much it was decided it should be kept for a separate bill. A lot of work was put into this, and the senator wasn't against that. At all. It just so happens that this specifically was for gender. And that's where the work had been done. But yes, I can see your point. Yeah.
Any other comments or questions for the sponsor?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davies?
I think the representative from Nome raises a really good issue, and I guess I don't have a specific amendment, but maybe I could just move a conceptual amendment to include minorities along with females in here.
Say that again, Representative Davies.
Mr. Chairman, I would just move that we include minorities as well as females in the study.
Would you care to consult with the sponsor of the bill on this?
Respectfully through the chair, again, this did come up in House State Affairs. An amendment was proposed, and the House State Affairs Committee decided not to take it up, that it would probably be best to take it up as its own separate bill, only because it would cause radical changes to this particular piece of legislation. The fiscal note would change, so forth, so on.
I think I have to agree with the sponsor on that. I mean, if we're going to do anything, we probably should have our own separate bill.
Just on that point, I think if you're going to get into the workforce and do the study that's required to find out whether there's pay inequity for females, you're going to have all the data right there. I mean, the big job is going to be collecting, getting the data in front of you, doing the incremental analysis to find out if it applies to minorities as well as to females is relatively small.
Representative Lancaster.
Mr. Chairman, maybe a question to Representative Davies. Would C on the back page possibly cover that? Help ensure equal pay for equal work? I mean, could it be inclusive enough in there to where maybe they would cover it? They're looking at work, equal pay for equal work.
Exactly. Well, exactly. I mean, I think in order to determine this for gender, you would have to essentially have all the data in front of you, and so it would be a relatively simple thing to add gender and minority status. You know, I just moved it conceptually just so that the drafter could have some leeway to put it in so it made sense, because I don't have an amendment drafted, but I think the representative Noam raised a really good point. I don't think I'd even move to change the fiscal note. I think you could do it with the same fiscal note.
Could you talk to the sponsor, and maybe we could get...
Well, if the sponsor were here, I could.
Well, I'm hearing that they don't want to do it right now. They had the same question brought up in the state affairs, and at that time, Senator Donnelly said he didn't want to have it on, and Ford is one of the other assistants of Senator Donnelly. Could I hear from her?
Just let me make one observation though on that. I think that one of the issues, as I recall reading, I'm not sure about this, but my recollection is that one of the issues that came up was the financial impact. And then, you know, here at the Finance Committee, I think we can, you know, we can look at the fiscal note. What I'm saying is I don't believe that it needs to have a fiscal impact. That I think that when they do the study, they'll have the data, and it will be relatively trivial to extend it.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Deb Davidson, staff with Senator Donnelly. Representative Davies, the conversation in House State Affairs regarding adding race to this study, and I believe that we have a representative from the department who can speak to it more specifically, the parameters set up in figuring out the initial study under this bill is to look at the job classifications and identify those that do have a pay disparity, and to look at those and to see if they can determine a reason why. If the work is different, that's why the pay is different. If they can't really find differences, then that will require then a larger study. This initial study is one: does there seem to be inequity for reasons we don't know? If there is, we need to do a study to find out why. When you include, and the senator spent, he can speak to this himself now, actually.
Here he is.
We are on
Could you restate your motion again for the senator?
My motion was conceptually to add minority status as well as gender in the study. My observation was you're going to have to collect essentially all the data that you would need to do either study, and that the incremental cost of adding the minority status seems to me to be relatively trivial.
I defer some of the response to that to Mr. Stewart from Department of Administration, but my understanding would be that wouldn't be an accurate analysis at all. You inject multiple variables into a study, you make it much more complex. We've gone through months and months of cooperative effort with Department of Administration to determine possible ways to do this study, talking to contractors and people in the 24 other states that have already done similar studies that were limited only to gender. The statutory sections of the bill that are referenced do not deal with race, they deal with gender. And when the same issue came up in the State Affairs Committee, the decision was made not to pursue that matter because of that. We worked cooperatively for many months before the session started to try to determine the best way to do this study in the most economical way. When the question last came up, we both, the administration and our office, both agreed we'd be back to square one trying to figure out how to do a study like that. But I'd like to have Mr. Stewart from the Department
Chairman,
of Administration.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dave Stewart. I'm with the Department of Administration's Division of Personnel. Representative Davies, the fiscal note for SB 65 from the Department of Administration is based on sampling the job classification system for compliance with the Equal Pay Act, which deals only with two sets of samples, male-dominated and female-dominated job classes. If we were to include race, we'd have to go back and expand for compliance with a different section of the law that deals with employment based on on race issues, it would require probably an expansion by four or five fold the number of samples necessary, just because of the population difference. And it could likely have an impact on the fiscal note.
Question, Davies.
When you talk about sampling, what does that entail? I mean, does that mean somebody physically goes and gets the data, or you program a computer to get it?
In this particular case, through the chair, Representative Davies, it would be a review of the job classifications for gender-based qualifications that could be considered gender-based, the so-called sex-free writing and minimum qualification issues. When you're looking at equal pay, the state's job classification system assigns pay rates based on the kind of work that's done, doesn't look at race, doesn't look at gender in determining the classification, it looks at the kind of work that's performed. In looking at those, the descriptions of the work, the minimum qualifications required is what would be sampled from a variety of the job families that the state classifies. There are no parameters set up to look at whether population density of race and gender mixtures influences the rates of pay based on race. We know that while the gender population is fairly even around the state, the race-based population is not.
So it's a much more complicated question that's been presented by a study that deals with gender.
Right.
And we would have to go back to the drawing board, because all the research we did for the bill was based on what other states have done, or they've done simply gender studies in some 24 or more other states to ascertain compliance with laws regarding to preventing gender discrimination.
Representative Hudson.
I think I agree with the senator, the prime sponsor here, is that if you go into minority status, you're going to begin to look at age-related and any other aspects that I think probably would be far more expansive study than what you're looking at here. If you're looking at the consequences of some court action and trying to ascertain whether or not we're, you know, meeting the compliance or whether or not we got some deficiencies and we should try to address those, and you're looking strictly at gender-based, I can see where that would be very straightforward. It'd be just male against female. But if you go into all of the other minority structures, you run into age and race and things of that nature. And so I don't know. I think I would prefer to leave it as it is.
Representative Davies?
Mr. Chairman, I think that you certainly with gender, you have to correct for age. And in fact, you may, in order to understand the gender issue, correct for minority status. So I question whether you could really do this study adequately just on this limited basis.
Senator?
Well, the advantage we have, Mr. Chairman, with gender is we have quite a few other states to follow their example. We've contacted, in the interim, we contacted some of the contractors that did those studies for other states, got a sense of how they'd go about that, and that assisted the Department of Administration preparing their fiscal note. The Department of Administration has been very good to work with on this issue, and I really appreciate their help in putting in minimizing the cost in this fiscal note as successfully as they have.
Any other discussion? Representative Croft?
Well, I do think after that testimony, this probably will cost more. It probably will affect the fiscal note, and it probably is a big iceberg. I'd like to see the size of this iceberg at least. And this is an initial study, and I'd like to know the contours of the problem we might be dealing with on race as well as gender.
Any other discussion on the amendment, Senator?
Mr. Chairman, I had similar legislation proposed some 10 years ago. I've worked on it since then, wanted to try to do this again. For that period of time, I've spent a lot of time looking at gender discrimination and trying to make sure we have pay equity between men and women. But I'm simply not familiar with expanding, you know, the information for expanding the scope of this. And I think it would take a lot of work to get up to speed on that, and that's the kind of thing I'd work on over in the interim and get ready, you know, and try to have all my ducks in a row and work with the Department of Administration and try to, you know, examine if there's been other studies. I mean, it's a lot of work to come up with something like this, and I think we've done a good job bringing a reasonable proposal on this for this particular issue, which I think is a very important issue to the people of Alaska. And over the years, I've received a lot of comment on the gender gap situation. And so I'd appreciate if we could just keep this bill focused on its original intent.
Chairman, I have a question. Call for the question. Oh, Representative Foster.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I hope something becomes of this study. I'm in favor of it, but you know, in the 13 years I've been here, I was just thinking, I average about a study a day, summer and during the session that I get, you know, and I'm sure I could fill a cargo van by now in 13 years here. And after about 5 or 10 years, you start throwing them in the garbage because you just can't, people just can't analyze that much stuff and try to come up with an answer. I just hope that we're able to do something with a study when you do have it done.
Thank you.
I'll call for the question.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
This is on the amendment.
Oh, the amendment.
Yes. This is on the amendment.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
No.
Representative Hudson.
No.
Representative Lancaster.
No.
Representative Moses.
No.
Representative Bundy.
No.
Representative Croft.
Yes.
Representative Davies.
Yes.
Representative Williams.
No.
3 yay. 6 nay.
3-6, the motion's defeated. Is there any more discussion on the bill? Question for the Representative Davies?
Yeah. I think the basic idea of the bill is real great. I just think we got to expand the scope a little bit, but as far as it goes, it's a good idea.
Representative Foster?
Yeah, I appreciate Representative Davies' comments. I'll go ahead and move CSSB 65 Finance out of committee with the attachment and open with individual recommendations.
Any objections? I'm at the bill moved to committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee. Appreciate it.
Next, we'll hear Senate Bill 86.
How about disabled minorities?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Chris Noss, Staff Senator Kelly. Mr. Chairman, over the last couple years, we've heard numerous accounts of the teacher shortage in the state of Alaska, and in fact, getting qualified teachers in the classroom around the state. Senate Bill 86 thinks a little outside the box. What the sponsor would like to do is put teachers with subject matter experience in the classroom. We've been working with the department on this and the university, and we feel what we have is a good consensus on a lot of parts. Just to start out and tell you the process of how a subject matter teacher gets into the classroom and becomes a certified regular teacher, I can kind of go through the steps of that. In order to be a subject matter teacher, you must have at least a bachelor's degree and 5 years work experience in the subject matter you wish to teach. Once employment is gained, the subject matter expert would be required to take a competency exam, go through the rigorous, paperwork and whatnot, and safeguards mean the fingerprints of other districts around the state. Next, they would be into the classroom and then have a mentor by an experienced teacher for the first year. And during this time, they have the limited certificate. During the year, they would be required to enroll in a curriculum, which we hope the university would instate, somewhat similar to their MAT program. And after the year, they have 2 years to require this curriculum. And once that curriculum is completed, they have a regular teaching certificate with what I believe is a secondary endorsement on it. So if there's any questions, I can answer. I can try my best.
Bundy has a question for you.
Do you know of any actual interest? Do we have people out there that have contacted you that would like to use this route? Or how many, or is this a case of build it and they will come?
Through the chair, Representative Buddy, we actually have had a few people notify our office once they've heard of the legislation introduced. The real need right now has actually come from some of the school districts in the rural areas of the state. The problem is finding the qualified people in those areas and actually getting them into the classroom.
Mr. Chairman, continue. I understand what the need is. I'm just wondering
if there's
people interested in this particular mechanism.
There has been interest.
Any other questions for the sponsor at this time? Representative Davies has a question.
I'm just trying to understand all the sideboards on here. So it says they have to be currently enrolled. So that they could only, a person could only teach in this role for, am I reading this right, for 2 years, is that right?
That's correct. Now that's in the fact that they're working on their curriculum towards their regular teaching certificate.
Right. So, but they couldn't, but a person couldn't stay in this limited certificate status for more than 2 years, is that correct?
That's correct.
Any other questions? Thank you. The department care to comment on this?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Bruce Johnson, the Deputy Commissioner of Education. The department has worked with Senator Kelly and members of his staff. We support this bill. I think it's moved a long ways from its initial concept. In partial response to Representative Bundy's question, we do have a lot of students that take advantage of the MAT program and basically the qualification requisite degree for an MAT program is that you hold a bachelor's degree in a subject area. And MAT students are not paid during the course of the year. These people would be paid while they're securing their regular Type A certificate. So we think that it will assist. It's limited only to their subject area specialty or their work experience area. So it's not a total solution, but it's part of the solution that we face here in Alaska.
Representative Davies and then Bundy.
But these would be mostly then at the secondary level, you think?
Through the chair, Representative Davies, we believe that they will generally be at the secondary level.
And is it your expectation that there would be a mentor teacher during both of the years that the person would be teaching?
Through the chair, it's required, I believe, in the first year, for sure. And we have some other programs ongoing that should help support that mentor-mentee relationship as well.
Representative Bundy has a question? Oh, yes, thank you. Do you have the bill there on page 3, section C, beginning line 4? And again, I just want to get this on the record. I think we've talked about it before, that the teacher has to, or the candidate has to take a competency examination. What will that competency examination look like according to state law? And it says they have to, that the competency test has to be administered. It doesn't say anything about passing. I assume that is a given.
Through the chair, Representative Bundy, certainly our interpretation, it's a given that they would have to pass that exam. The exam would be administered at the local level, not a state-administered exam.
Mr. Chairman, Mike, but as I understand it, there is a state statute that requires a basic competency test. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Bundy, yes, they would also have to meet that requirement in a timely fashion.
Thank you.
Representative Davies?
Yeah, and is it is the requirement, what kind of level of effort does this person have to put into attaining this certification during this time? Will they be taking night school or what?
Through the chair, Representative Davies, what's been envisioned in discussing this with the university is that there would be a startup summer program prior to their actual going on the job. And that would likely be on some campus site. UAS has indicated an interest in getting involved in providing an experience for this initial cohort. They would then, during the course of the year, do audio conferences and distance-delivered kinds of courses, web-based courses, while they're actually in their assignment. The goal is not to overburden these people so that they their studies distract from their capacity to be successful in the classroom. And then the following summer, they could come back. So we envision for some, particularly those that might be working only in a part-time basis, of completing this within 2 summers and an academic year. If you're employed full-time, we have the 2-year provision, which would allow you then to spread that out so that you don't feel quite so overwhelmed.
I guess that was my concern, is that my experience, my vicarious experience with my wife starting off was that she didn't have a lot of spare time first of all.
And through that.
Representative Hudson has a question.
Mr. Johnson, are there an awful lot of these positions that need to be filled in Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Hudson, we don't know the answer to that right now. We do know that we have shortages in some of the math and science areas. So you translate as to how that might work in a small rural community. You might have a biologist that's out there, maybe even retired, might be willing to come in and teach the science classes for which they have the work experience and the bachelor's degree. In the urban areas, I can't speak to how hiring authorities might use this, but there's no reason why they can't open up the door to all candidates that would qualify under this more limited certificate, as well as those that hold the full Type A certificate at the current time, and select the best candidate given their judgment. I think one of the concerns that we have right now is that often when you open a position, you only have a limited number of candidates. This will open up that door a bit as well. So I think we'll be able to attract good quality people through this avenue.
Representative Davies.
Yeah, I certainly think the evidence is out there that we're heading toward a increasing shortages, and especially at the subject area level, people that are qualified to teach math or qualified to teach chemistry or physics or something like that. I guess my question goes more toward, how much do you think that the normal MAT student is going to start taking this course of action?
Representative Williams, Representative Davies, certainly there may be some of that because of the capacity to be paid. I think it depends if you're an aspiring MAT student and all of a sudden you can qualify for a full-time role here and get your teaching career started and you feel comfortable with that, I suspect they're going to want to go this direction if the school district is open to it.
And I don't think that's necessarily bad. I think to get into the classroom and have a mentor there is probably the finest way to get started. But we may have more of a pent-up demand for this than one might imagine. It might not just be the shortage-driven demand, but the normal career path as well.
Representative Hudson. I mean, Foster.
Yeah, I was wondering, if you're in a remote area, let's say you're in Savunga, and you've got a degree, you otherwise meet all this criteria, but one of these here, here it says, you've got to go into a baccalaureate, a post-baccalaureate training program. Subject matter teachers are authorized to teach in the classroom pending they enroll in a post-baccalaureate teaching program. Is that somehow possible if you're out in an area like Savunga?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, we believe it is, and we've had enough conversation with the university that during that academic year when students are in session, that would be distance delivered. Okay. They would not be expected to show up on campus every Thursday night. But it would be a seminar, reflective, integrated evening with a professor and a cohort of students. And then during the summer, they might be asked to come to a campus, whether that's a regional campus or one of the 3 major campuses.
So are you ready, Mark? Yeah. We do have one person that wishes to testify, I think. Lawrence?
Lorenz.
Through the chair, my name is Randy Lorenz. I'm here on behalf of my wife, Debbie Lorenz. She has a master's in library science. She meets the requirements of, she has a Type C teaching certificate. It's taught for now going on her fourth year in the Matsu Valley. She's also met all the requirements for a Type A teaching certificate in social studies. Because UAA does not offer a library science degree, she is unable to get a Type A teaching certificate in library science, which is her love and her passion. She further cannot get a Type A in social studies unless she quits her job or she goes for her student teaching in another state. She's already tenured. She'd have to give up her tenure, attempt to get back in the system, and then reestablish her tenure to get a Type A teaching certificate. Presently in the Matsu Valley, there's very few qualified librarians. Most of them are teachers that do not have the expertise or the education. As a result, 3 years ago, the server that handles all the libraries for the Matsu Valley crashed because the teacher that was the librarian did not know what her responsibilities were as a librarian, did not back up the server, and lost 4 years of data. That required my wife to spend 3 years to reestablish over 10,000 books back in the system just in her school alone. She could not do it during school time. This was all after school and during summer vacations. With this bill, this will enable her to maintain and stay with her job that she presently has and to allow her to get a Type A teaching certificate in library sciences, which is what she wants. She's not the only one in the Matsu Valley. There's three other people that have completed their library science degrees but have chosen not to bother to get a teaching degree for the same problems that she is presently going through. With this bill, if it passes, this will enable her to get a Type A teaching certificate and do what she really enjoys. I have nothing else. I appreciate your time and any questions.
Thank you, Randy. Representative Foster?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move SB 3086 out of Finance Committee with the attached notes and the individual recommendation.
Any objection? If not, we'll move from committee.
Too bad we don't have more bills. We're out of bills. Aren't we out of bills?
And we both moved.
Oh, yeah, you
moved.
Fine. For tomorrow.
Yep.
For tomorrow, we have House Bill 185, or Senate Bill 145, Senate Bill 149, Senate Bill 152, Senate Bill 158. Nothing more to come before this committee. This committee stands adjourned.